Studios. Here's Paul Gallant.
Berrettini skies one deep to right field. Has he done it twice on this road trip? He has! Second grand slam on the trip for Berrettini. The Astros score four, and it's a 13-1 lead.
Gets spoiled on this road trip. It's my second four-olive martini. Victor serving it up.
Who doesn't like a four-olive martini?
Oh, it's beautiful.
You can never have enough olives in a martini. I want my martini exceptionally dirty, porn star dirty, Galveston dirty, with vodka, not gin, and all of the olive juice. I want it to look kind of gross. Four olives will help. That's for damn sure. So Victor Caratini had a grand slam for the Astros. That's four of the 29 runs the Astros scored in L.A. over the weekend. A sweep of the Dodgers. So, take a look at them right now. Your Houston Astros just went 8-1 against three National League division leaders over a matter of just 2 weeks. At this moment in time, they trail only the Detroit Tigers, who beat them in the playoffs last year, for the best record in baseball. That's it. Although I guess technically the Dodgers have a half game on them. But if we're talking tiebreaker, because the Dodgers have played one more game, Astros have it now. So they're half a game back at the Tigers, I guess. I guess we got to say that. I don't know. You lose 29-6 at your own house. I feel like that should count as like five games. But that's just me. So they're a game and a half back at the Tigers. They're a game up on the Cubs, who they took 2-3 against. They are two games up on the Phillies, who they swept. And they lead the suddenly surging Toronto Blue Jays by three games in the American League. So they have, if the season were to end today, one of the American League's two first-round byes. And they did all of this weekend in L.A. without Yordan Alvarez and without Jeremy Peña. Next man up, it continues. It's been Ryan Gusto. It's been Brandon Walter. It's been Colton Gordon. It's been Zach Short. It's been Taylor Trammell. It's been Cooper Hummel. All sorts of names that you'd never heard of before and probably didn't think you'd hear over the course of the season, even if you are the biggest Astros farm system dork. No offense. Luis Guillorme. I mean, all the other guys that have been coming and rising through the ranks because there's no one else left. It's been really incredible, and I think you can make a case that the Astros have put together the best resume in baseball this season. You take a look at their actual numbers. Did you know that among all teams in baseball, the Astros have the best batting average officially after this weekend? They overtook the Dodgers. They are hitting .261. That is the best mark in the sport. What? Isn't that wild? No Kyle Tucker, no Alex Bregman. Both are all-stars. Best average in the game. I get that baseball is no longer about batting average. It's about getting home runs. It's about getting extra base hits. And they are eighth on that front. Not ideal, but they have the best average in the sport. We know how good their bullpen's been. We know how good their pitching's been because their pitching also leads the majors in strikeouts. And they've got 39 more strikeouts than any other team. The Philadelphia Phillies are in second place with 832. They've got 871. They've played the same amount of games. And they have that many more strikeouts? Astros pitching to this point, also dealing with a lot of injuries. You know, three guys from the starting rotation on the injured list at the beginning of the year. Ronel Blanco, Hayden Wisniewski. And they have a 1.16 walks, hits per innings pitched that is tied for the best mark in baseball with the Texas Rangers of all teams. Surprising. Didn't think we would see that. So, in a lot of statistical categories, the Astros are towards the top. But I keep on going back to what I've been saying all season long about this Astros team. Just to quote our zealot Knight Templar from the movie Kingdom of Heaven, God wills it! God wills it!
God wills it! God wills it! God wills it!
God wills it! I don't know how they're doing it, but they're doing it. So is there divine intervention? Or, I don't know, a little deal with the devil. I watched this movie yesterday. It's a Christian Bale movie where he's a detective. And it's in the 1830s, and he is basically tasked with solving some murders that are taking place at West Point. It's called The Pale Blue Eye. He plays a detective named Augustus Landor, and he's working with Edgar Allan Poe. Yes, that guy. Played by the guy who played Dudley Dursley from Harry Potter in that movie, and turns out that they're investigating satanic people. You know, people that are doing some satanic ceremonies and such. Maybe the Astros are doing a little bit of that. I'm okay with a little 666. If it gets the Astros a title, I'll worry about, you know, the damnation thing a little bit later. But something's going on. It really doesn't make much sense to me. It might be why someone like Oral Hershiser, in the midst of Friday's beatdown, is saying, hey, man, I don't want to open an old wound, but in some ways they're swinging at these breaking balls like they know what is coming. Well, maybe through divine intervention, they do. God wills it!
God wills it!
My bad for the delay.
God wills it!
Shout out to AJ, knowing when to come in with that. I love that. I want everyone to just think this quote all the time. And maybe you'll even watch Kingdom of Heaven, the director's roadshow edition by Ridley Scott, the true version of the movie, which is also like 3 hours plus. But hey, that who's counting? Who's keeping tabs? It's a movie about war in the Middle East and about how it might have been pointless the whole way. Maybe just be a righteous dude or a perfect knight as opposed to being, I don't know, a zealot. But anyway, God wills it. The Astros continue to win. And yeah, I'm going to say it. They're the best team in baseball. There's enough statistics that I could selectively bring up to back myself up if I have to make that kind of argument. And if you did go into LA with all their money and all their toys and sweep them by a final score on aggregate of 29-6 today, July 7th, 2025, you can say that. I think there's a case to be made for some other teams who are as hot, if not hotter, than the Astros right now. I would point to the Toronto Blue Jays, who all of a sudden, holy crap, what the hell's going on there? But the Mariners also have actually been playing pretty well. And yet they're still 7 games back of the Astros in the American League West. But what the Astros are doing right now, I think, gives them a very strong case to be the best team in all of baseball, in spite of an unbelievable amount of injuries that, sure, maybe the Dodgers are dealing with as well. Still, both teams are banged up going into this series, and you're losing 29-6 in your own backyard against a team that you constantly think about and you can't get over because they cheated you in 2017. Like, woof. The last time from the 346, the texter says that LA had 10 runs scored on them was April 23rd of 1999. At Dodger Stadium, I'm assuming. I could be wrong on that front. But this is a record as far as runs scored at Dodger Stadium. This was one of the biggest beatdowns that they've faced, I think, since, what was it? I want to say it was since, I had the number in front of me. It's the first sweep of the Dodgers in LA since 2008. They've won 19 of 24. They're 20 games above 500. the best batting average in baseball, best walks, hits per innings pitched, most strikeouts. It's really impressive. Another texter from the 713. Another thing Oral Hershiser said when it was 17-1 and the umpires blew a strikeout call. He said, well, the strike zone should be opened up. Let's have some fireworks. He just wanted to get to the fireworks. No, the Astros weren't done. They had to score at least one more run, sir. One more. You know? From the 281, a texter says, I'm not going to lie, I'm over the Blummerisms on the home run calls. Hey, I like Jeff Blum. Some of them are a little annoying, but I like the Martini one. I like that. It's because I like martinis. Paul, are you saying you're an alcoholic? No, I would never. I've never had a drink in my life. Today. Because today is the greatest day of my life, just like every day is the greatest day of your life, you know? And I haven't had a drink today yet. 713-780-3776 to call to text. YouTube at ESPN Houston. Twitch at ESPN 975. We're getting closer and closer to the kickoff of the NFL season. We are 59 days away. What's going on in the world of football? Not a whole lot.
Woo!
Now.
Football time. We are 59 days away from the NFL season kicking off September 4th, where the Super Bowl champion Philadelphia Eagles will unveil banner number 2 against the Dallas Cowboys. Who's the best number 59 in NFL history? Jack Ham, Steelers linebacker from the Steel Curtain defense, is the only guy who wore number 59 who's in the Hall of Fame. I was always a big London Fletcher guy back in the day. I felt like that guy played for a million years, always consistent, always good. You've also got Luke Kuechly. As far as Houston Texans to wear number 59, off the top of my head, only D'Amico Ryans came to mind. Other than that, wasn't Kenyon Green 59 for a moment? But it is pretty cool that the current head coach of the Houston Texans played for them back in the day. Whitney Merciless as well, a first-round pick of them in 2012. He was a pretty damn good player, too. So two pretty good players have worn 59 for the Houston Texans, none of them Hall of Famers. All right, what's going on in the National Football League? Speaking of the Houston Texans, they and the Dallas Cowboys have each contributed $500,000 for flood relief in Texas. Death toll for the flash flooding that's taken place in Central Texas, Kerrville, and at the Mystic Camp. It's absolutely horrible. We're talking close to 100 deaths. It's just awful. So the Texans and Cowboys have contributed to relief efforts, $500,000 apiece. I think they both sent them to the Salvation Army. So you want to raise money yourself for them. There are ways to do it through the Red Cross and through the Salvation Army. I hope that they find everyone. I hope there's more people that found a way to cling onto trees like we've seen some stories about. Continuing to go around the National Football League, President Donald Trump had a hot take. He was talking about the Washington Commanders, who used to be the Washington Redskins. They are no longer that name. They have changed their name multiple times since then. First, Washington Football Team. After that, they became the Commanders. I think the Commanders is lame, personally, as a nickname. That's not me saying they should go back to the Redskins. I thought they should have called themselves the Washington Hogs, because the color is similar to hogs, like burgundy and gold. That looks like a pigskin. Or a pig. On top of that, the best Washington teams of the day, of all time, were probably either the late 70s or the early 90s. And I forget if it was the 70s teams with John Riggins or if it was the Joe Gibbs early 90s teams that had the nickname the Hogs as far as their offensive linemen were concerned. I think it was the 70s teams, but like that was a big part of their history. Commanders is lame. Because Commanders is reference to politicians, and let's be honest, F politicians, left, right, you all suck. You all suck. Anyway, speaking of those Commanders, Terry McLaurin wide receiver, is not happy with the team. He's still looking for a contract extension. He boycotted the entire offseason program to this point, both voluntary and mandatory camps. We have yet to see him get a new deal. He turns 30 September 15th. Five straight 1,000-yard receiving seasons. Last year, 82 catches for 1,096 yards and 13 touchdowns. I think you'd want to have this guy for Jaden Daniels, considering he got all the way to the AFC, to the NFC Championship game with that guy. Commanders, don't be the old Commanders. I'm telling you. Speaking of wide receivers who have been in the league for a while, who also maybe have a big ego, but this guy, undeservedly, Chase Claypool. Remember him? Chase Claypool once said he was a top three wide receiver, which was a crazy statement at the time. But Chase Claypool, who is, I think, is he with the Bills? Is he with the Bears? I honestly don't even know where he is. Chase Claypool. Where the hell is Chase Claypool playing? He says he's in the best shape of his life, which is skeptical given that he's dealt with a lot of injuries. He is a... Is he on a team right now? He was on the Bills in the offseason, but I guess he's a free agent right now. Damn. All right. Well, hey, Texans, huh? Honestly, the guy was so annoying with the amount of times that he's hyped himself up that I probably passed. But there you go. Chase Claypool is in the best shape of his life. He's stronger and faster than ever. What else is going on across the National Football League? Hey, Sauce Gardner. Everyone used to say he was better than Derek Stingley and that the Texans were idiots for drafting Stingley third overall and Gardner fourth. Now everyone thinks that the Texans made the right call in drafting Derek Stingley third overall and letting Sauce Gardner go to the Jets at fourth. Gotta say, Sauce has got a lot of ego to him, and I think that honestly works against him. Meanwhile, Derek Stingley is perhaps the least egomaniacal defensive back that we have ever seen. Gardner was 47th out of 52 cornerbacks in terms of expected points added per targets. I don't know what the hell that means, but wasn't very good at it. And Jets coaching staff, they want more from Sauce Gardner. We talked about him last week. Like he is very insufferable, I think. He just talks too much. And it's one thing if you're talking and winning, but if you're not talking and winning, if you're on the Jets and talking, honestly, it just makes me roll my eyes. But the Jets coaching staff, they want a little more out of him. So there you go. What else is going on around the National Football League? It's a pretty slow day. Pretty slow day. I'm just scrolling through a couple of websites. Did you know that the Toronto Argonauts have the negotiating rights to Shedeur Sanders? They drafted him, I guess, way back in the day, but there you go. If he doesn't work out in the National Football League, he could be a Toronto Argonaut. I know, it's a slow day. The Philadelphia Eagles still haven't gotten their Super Bowl 59 rings. Super Bowl licks. Still waiting for them. What else is going on? Oh, this is some sad news. You might remember former Texans linebacker Brian Braman. He had long hair. Special teams demon. He's fighting a rare and aggressive form of brain cancer. He's only 38 years old. He was diagnosed with it in February. He's had multiple surgeries while undergoing treatment for it in Seattle. J.J. Watt gave him $10,000 as far as a GoFundMe, $53,000 after the raise. Braman was a fun player, maniac out there. He played for the Philadelphia Eagles. He played for the New England Patriots as well. Check that. No, he didn't play for the Patriots. He played for the Eagles, won a Super Bowl with the Eagles, blocked a punt in the divisional round win against the Falcons in the Nick Foles Super Bowl run. So that's fun. What else is going on in the National Football League? Jason Pierre-Paul. Remember the firework accident? Well, he did an interview after losing 2.5 fingers 10 years ago with ESPN, and he says he wants to play for the Giants again. Quote, I think that'll be dope. tremendous to go back somewhere where my career started. The fans know me and know the type of player that I am. I'll always be that type of player and just give them everything I got, which I know will be more than enough. 94 and a half career sacks for Jason Pierre-Paul, who, of course, you know, lost some fingers. How many more sacks would he have if he hadn't blown off his fingers? Many people are wondering. What else is going on around the National Football League? Stephon Gilmore talked about a moment where Bill Belichick almost made him cry. That's fun, huh? That's really cool. The Steelers, they think that TJ Watt will accept their best offer. Okay, that's good luck with that. Also, Jack Easterby, he's alive still. I know. We're really digging the bottom of the barrel here. Jack Easterby thinks that he was fired because of the fans. Here's what he said. We'll definitely do this a little bit more tomorrow. He was on the Ross Tucker Football Podcast. There are lots of people that, quite frankly, we had to transition out of there. So that was probably one of the other things I would say was really hard for people to understand on the outside. Fans love football. So if they're like, hey, this isn't between me and where I want to be, there's going to be criticism and justifiably so. That comes with it, right? That's just part of it. God, he's always speaking in LinkedInese. What does that even mean? Any of what he said? I got a headache from reading that. It is the Paul Gallant Show. ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. 713-780-3776 to call the text. YouTube at ESPN Houston. Twitch at ESPN 975. Are the Astros the best team in baseball? Our Houston Astros front office insider, Jeremy Booth, joins us next to answer that question and more as the Astros just took down the Los Angeles Dodgers by a combined score of 29-6 over the last 3 games. It's the Paul Gallant Show. I'm Paul Gallant, ESPN 97.5 and 92.5, and on the brand new ESPN Houston app.
Involved in the conversation by dialing or texting 713-780-3776. Here's Paul Gallant.
Joining me in studio right now, our Houston Astros front office insider, Jeremy Booth, who has two very detailed brand new sleeves on each of his forearms. Dog, I'm too much of a puss for that. This is impressive.
I had to finish it up. It was, bicep sleeves for a while, and then it turned into something where I finally had a minute to go ahead and finish them up. But, they're pretty, they feel good. Got my family on here. Got the maze of life. Yeah, no, it looks cool. It's pretty deep stuff.
And if you're watching on YouTube or on Twitch, I mean, listen, it's not like I'm the most imposing man as it is, but I really look like a bitch right now. I really look like a bitch. He's alphing the hell out of me right now. Speaking of alphing, holy crap. I did not see that coming. 29-6, the Astros outscored the Dodgers over the course of the weekend. 18-1 is the main reason on Friday, but Jeremy, this weekend, it wasn't just Altuve doing what Altuve does, Christian Walker doing what he did in the National League West, amongst others. We were seeing real contributions from the next man up after the next man up, a Zach Short, who I'd never heard of until this weekend.
Right.
The amount of guys that continue to step up for this team and do their job is truly impressive and at the same time, seemingly impossible, but it's clearly not because we're seeing them do it.
You know, if you go into any series against the on paper, one of the best teams that's assembled in quite some time, and you win 2 out of 3, let alone destroy them. And I know it was like 18-1 was one game, right?
But
you still demoralize people and start – beating up on them pretty good. It says a lot about your culture that you're carrying right now, because the Astros don't have all their guns back. So this means this is a team, like you said, Zach Short, like this is reaching to the depths of the roster to contribute to win games. And that means it's going well. To win championships, you have to be able to do that. You got to have all 26 guys contribute in some way, shape, or form towards a winning club. This is interesting for me, though, because when Alvarez comes back, you got to wonder if the performance is going to continue. The Astros, we all know the Astros got another lull in there somewhere, at least historically. There's another week or month or 3 weeks where they're not going to play well. It's coming somewhere. Haven't really had it yet. It's going to pop in there where things aren't going to go right. There's going to be some times where it's going to be frustrating offensively. And if you get one of the best left-hand hitters in the game back when he's healthy, Jordan Alvarez, does Pena let the foot off the gas pedal? No. These other guys that are contributing, no. Does Myers let up? No. You got to find ways to continue to maximize what's going on, because you got to ask, it's a fair question, when Jordan's in the lineup, does everybody just chill? Do they take the day off? I don't know because
I feel pretty confident that they wouldn't, just given the way that this year is going. I feel like everyone's looking at each other and thinking to themselves, well, I got to do my job. I'm not going to get many opportunities to do it. And also, if I let everybody else down, I mean, damn.
Yeah, and that's
going to look at me side-eyed.
That's kind of, though, it's not so much now, because I agree with you now. I think they're going to keep going here. But I also think that historically they have had to answer that question too. You've had people take time off and step away and not perform and wonder what's going on. Then Alvarez hits a 2-run home run. And then, you know, in the past it's been Bregman or who, somebody else steps up and does something, but it's two guys. It's three guys instead of nine, right? And right now it's nine guys. And so you got to feel good about it. And then you really got to feel good about what happens when the pitching comes back.
Yeah.
Got to forget about, because I think they're going to get some help here on the mound.
I mean, the wild thing about what they've just pulled off in 2 weeks, where they beat three division-leading teams in the National League, is what you laid out. There are lots of guys who are banged up who we hope to see back in the second half of the year. Promising news for Jordan Alvarez. That's right. On Thursday. When it came to Jeremy Pena, I'm very skeptical about anything the Astros say about any injury, but they're sounding optimistic that he'd be back sooner rather than later. You mentioned all of those pitchers, and then they also have the easiest schedule in baseball the rest of the way.
Yeah, that was a good point you made before. You know, you made
and it's still easy. I mean, now it's even easier. They just play the Dodgers. So that's out of the way. So it got a little easier.
Yeah, you know, you really got to feel good about the direction of the organization. You know, at the third of the season, I wrote about what they needed: outfield help and pitching, and Cam Smith was the answer, not just for, you know, wasn't going to help necessarily 25, just that, but certainly going forward. He's maturing quickly, okay? Mm-hmm. Outfield help seems to come from within, right, as far as what we got. And then the pitching help, pitching's been interesting how they put that together and kept it going, even with guys down. And now when they get the guys back, that is their depth. Now, Dana told me at the start of the year when I asked him, I said, man, you got – start talking about the team as a whole. It's just settled on the pitching staff because you need starters. He goes, we got guys in AAA. We'll come up and make relievers and bump it up. I said, okay, we've run that playbook before. He wasn't wrong. You know, he wasn't wrong. It's almost like this scouting thing has some merit to it, you know. And it's just, it's funny how that goes. I don't see – can I say this? I can say this.
Yes.
I don't see a lot of the analysts – that are analysts only online, like just losing their minds right now. I don't see them criticizing. I don't see them going after it. You know why? Because when you have balance in a front office, which is what these guys have now, they're not tilted one way. They're not tilted the other. Dana's listening to all these voices and making a decision, which is how the good clubs run. It's not a shot at Click and it's not a shot at Luno because they had their own styles. But when you balance it out, look what you can do with players who aren't necessarily as talented. When you get your big guns back, you have a culture where everybody contributes, where it's about getting to the next guy instead of having all this guy's got to have this WOBA and this guy's got to have this BAB. You have baseball players. And the one thing, the one unifying trait between all these Astros clubs that have won is that they've had pretty good baseball players, right? Regardless of who's been in the chair. So now Dana's got to do a tougher job, frankly, than Luno ever did. It was a tougher job. Okay, because he had all the talent that Luno had left for him and some that he added is now getting off the roster. And then Click inherited a team. Good job by James keeping them together, right? But he didn't put the team together. It was the previous regime times two. This is Dana. This really is Dana. This is Dana's work. And so when you start tying together, I've added this guy. I let this guy walk. I brought this guy up. Some of the draft picks that are left behind, very few. The ones that hit, he's made sure they've hit, right? Gavin Dickey's made sure they've hit. This front office deserves a lot of credit, you know, for how they've done it, kept it together, and even got Joe Espada to get Jeremy Pena out of the 7-hole. Imagine how that worked out.
There it is.
Yeah, it's got exception.
I mean, look, lineup construction and a lot of different things, what they've done this year, it's been impressive. We talked about this on KHOU before this past week. We were both, I think, on the same page. We like Dana Brown as executive of the year. Maybe we're a little close to home or biased, but, I mean, he is, you know, if you've watched the TV show MacGyver from back in the 80s, I think they did a reboot of it, too.
Yeah.
You know, with that beautiful hair that guy had. MacGyver! I mean, he is stringing crap together with rubber bands, bubble gum, duct tape, and everyone keeps on doing exactly what he is asking them to do. And it really does feel, and I've been making this joke, there's this clip in a movie I love called Kingdom of Heaven where this, like, psycho Knight Templar before about to commit some war crimes is going, God wills it! God wills it! As if everything's going to be A-okay afterwards. And that's what's happening right now. And I wish I could explain it. I mean, there's got to be a part of you that's like, what? How is this happening?
I had these guys at 85 wins.
I just
did.
You did.
I had 85 wins. And you can't – the beautiful thing about what we do is once you say it or write it, like, it's out there. You can't take it back. You can say, oh, I was wrong, or maybe I underestimated, or maybe I was – once you say it. That's it. And I had 85 wins is where I had them. I didn't trust the pitching depth. I just didn't. I don't trust the medical staff at all. And I think so bringing those guys back to me was like, okay, maybe. If they get them back, sure. But if. And then I wasn't concerned overall about the lineup depth. I was concerned about how they put it together. I just was. You get some guys that play over their mean, which is what some guys are doing, and you get some guys that you're underperforming that catch fire later and it balances out, then you have your club you put together. The question is, when does it happen? And this is where I'll give Joe Espada credit, somebody who I don't dislike, but somebody I'm really going to be hard on for what happened last year. I'm not pumped with the way he handled it. He's got to prove something to me differently, and he is now with how he's handled Pena. He's keeping these guys focused. He's keeping them on task. He's keeping them moving. He's keeping them energized to go to the ballpark every day. And that is not easy to do when you have a cast of characters that people are expecting to lose, right? Let's be honest. You roll this Astros out lineup out right now every night, even with what they're doing. Take the numbers, take the win-loss record out of there. This lineup right now, how do you feel?
I don't feel good about it, and yet I look at the batting average. Did you see that they have the best batting average in
baseball?
Hold
on, are we still doing that? Because analysts, is that okay? Are we still doing batting average? Because, you know, that's the biggest component of on-base percentage.
It's so weird that people do not like batting average anymore.
Don't get it.
When did the shift really happen as far as the analytically inclined? Because I'm a baseball casual, but I've always been a big believer that batting average is the most important stat because it proves that you can get on base and you can potentially create runs. Jeremy is frustratedly rubbing his hand through his head.
I had a scout I cross-checked, a supervised one time, and he's now a national cross-checker with a club. And he said to me one time, I had a question about a player, and I liked this guy. It's like, I liked his tools. I hadn't seen a whole lot of him, but I liked what I saw. And I said, hey, man, how's this kid doing? He goes, you don't need to see him. And I said, why? And he said, because at some point you got to get a hit, and he hasn't yet. Okay? It was a pretty simple, yet direct and correct assessment. That kid went in like the 7th, 8th round and did nothing, right? At some point you got to get a hit. What that means is that some analysts somewhere decided that batting average, there were too many factors that you couldn't control that made it irrelevant. And so they switched on base percentage. But the biggest component of on base percentage is, you guessed it,
hits.
Batting average and hits, man. Can't walk every time. So how are you going to count on base percentage and forget the hit part? Why? Because all they wanted to do was see slug. All they wanted to do is see guys drive the baseball. Now, keep in mind, many of the analysts today, it's not their fault, haven't played the game at all. Not their fault. This is what it is. Doesn't mean you're unqualified to assess it. Just in play. But if you ever had to stand in the box at any level against something that does this and does this and does this, you know exactly how difficult it is. And sitting there swinging out of your wazoo as hard as you can, trying to hit it as far as you can, does not work. There's a couple guys that can do that. One guy was named, I don't know, Bonds.
Barry Bonds.
You know, another guy might have been, Alex Rodriguez comes to mind. You know, in a present day, you might see an Aaron Judge that works for, who's 6'7", 400 pounds. So, you know what I mean? You can't ask Bregman to do that. You can't ask these other guys. You have to hit first. And in the scouting boxes, when they go to grade it, man, it's not power for hit. It's hit for power. Well, when you hit, you get have a better chance to make hard contact, right? So we just switched around somewhere. We thought, you know, the kids who never played the game that are in the chair, they have really smart. Man, they're so smart. You see these guys, they're brilliant. But baseball-wise, they're not too – it takes a little bit to season. They watch a lot of guys in what we can call the performance enhancement era.
Right.
Okay? Hit all these balls 9 miles and throw 102 and just thought that's how you're supposed to do it. And that ain't just how you're supposed to do it. Now, we've evolved training-wise, and it's kind of a long way to get back to. They didn't care about singles. They wanted to see balls go 450. Does that make sense? Mm-hmm. So that made sense. Get on base and hit ball 450. And that's how we got away from batting average. But go back and look at all the World Series winning teams in the last 20 years. All of them, including the ones that played here. And watch what numbers stand out to you. It's going to be batting average. It will still be on base percentage. It will be defense. It'll be deeper stats like, how they hit runners in scoring position and how pitchers, you know, prevent shortened games and starters with innings, all the stuff that, I don't know, has been around baseball for 150 years. You didn't create it. I didn't create it. AJ didn't create it. Nobody created it. It's just whoever did at the time, that's how the game is played. And so when you watch these Astros clubs, what's been fun is watching when they're scouted right, how they're augmented right, something that all these front offices somehow have had a good hand in, all of them, going back to Ed Wade and Bobby Heck, they always show up with the right metrics all the time. They ain't swinging and missing. They're not walking a bunch of guys. They're putting the balls in play. They're getting a lot of ground balls. They're executing defensively. They're getting strikeouts when they need it, and they drive the baseball.
Yeah.
You know what they call that?
Winning baseball?
They call it baseball. Yeah. They call it baseball. It's funny how that works out, isn't it?
They lead the majors in strikeouts, too, by the way, by a significant margin. I think they have 39 more strikeouts than the Phillies, who are in second place. They've played as many games as Philadelphia, and walks, hits, per innings pitched as well throughout the top of that, too.
And I bet those are concentrated where? A couple of guys?
I would imagine it's the entire staff, though, if you've got it like that.
You're talking about the pitching.
Yeah, they're pitching.
Yeah, pitching. Yeah, yeah. Well, yeah. But see, that hitters is what I was thinking. Yeah, pitching.
Yeah, I feel you.
Yeah, pitching. But they got to get strikeouts. Strikeouts are part of the game. And if the rest of the league isn't adjusting to the hit first concept, because we're adjusting back. I just had a conversation with JJ Cooper, Baseball America's editor, and we were talking about how we're back in the era of the sinker and slider. We're not so much in the four seam rotation, which means ground balls. Mm-hmm. It means soft contact. It means efficiency. It means extending games. You know what else they call that?
Small ball?
Baseball.
Oh, baseball.
Call it baseball. Call it baseball. So when you're in it, when you're in the focus of trying to play the game correctly, and other guys are swinging out of their, you guessed it, the word wazoo comes back to mind, mm-hmm. then fastball's up at the top of the zone and sliders off the plate will get them out every time. So they should be doing that.
Someone texted in. Todd the Show put this up on the Twitch. Runs is the most underrated stat. I mean, run creation and I guess what would be considered maybe small ball, making soft contact, getting the ball out of the infield for a single.
Hold on, man. You mean somebody took the time, and I do appreciate that, to mention that scoring is underrated?
But don't you feel like that does get overlooked every now and then if we're talking about a slugging percentage?
You got to score runs to win.
Yeah.
I just thought it was a foregone conclusion. How many games have you seen 1-0-0?
None, because it just keeps on going on and on.
I mean, somebody's got to score.
And on,
so.
And on. Yeah, this isn't soccer. Thankfully, by the way, on right. that front, which we're terrible at, again. But to bring it back to this, there's something else brought up. I find this interesting, and I'm looking for reasons to explain how the Astros continuously have injuries, and a guy steps up, and they actually do pretty well. Do you think that the fact that they were as successful as they were last year in the AAA level has any bearing on some of the guys who are coming up through the minors? Because they were the first half, second half, and in the series against the other league, International League champions, the Sugar Land Space Cowboys last season.
I do for this reason. I think winning at the minor league level teaches people how to close out games. It teaches people how to execute in situations, and it teaches people to have confidence in their ability to persevere and to accomplish a goal, right? Now, there was a time in player development where the majority of organizations, not everybody, didn't buy into that. But the other, conversely, you can get on the other side and have too many winning, you know, too much focus on wins and not have enough prospects. The goal is to teach prospects how to win, how to play into their role and teach them how to win. And if they do that, they should arrive in the big leagues with a winning mindset. Winning mindset means winning culture. If they know how to play the game into their role, they have what's called fallback skills. And then all of a sudden you see guys like Zach Short contribute.
Yeah.
And so if that's the case, and then again, the Astros culture change, which has happened in the last now 3 years, right? Dana's first year was 23. That's not right?
Yeah.
23. So this is now 3 years since he's had a chance to turn this over. It's been pretty good. They've done a good job. I mean, I can't look, and I believe I'm fair on this club. I've been tough at times, and they've been tough when they need to be, and I praise when they deserve it, and they deserve it right now across the board.
I think what you said going into the year too was an accurate way to look at the team, where this is a closer to 500 team than we thought. I mean, they won the AL West last year with 88 wins, right? In a maybe even less, because I think one of the games got rained out at the end of the year. They never replayed it. In a season where, I mean, they had Kyle Tucker, at least at the end of the year. They had Alex Bregman. And to think that they would continue this, where you are hoping that Cam Smith can at some point be just a like solid everyday player, not this. There are a lot of, and I mean, Christian Walker, at least until recently, had underachieved. Jose Altuve, maybe the home run number's up, but I think relative to what we've seen from him in the past, hasn't been his best season at the plate. Jeremy Pena, we had yet to see him do this. Yordan Alvarez, when he was playing, he wasn't hitting particularly well. And then just factor in the many injuries in this starting rotation, where at some point you would think there's got to be a, like, there's a certain point where you shouldn't be able to overcome it.
Yeah,
and yet, here we are.
The injuries in the rotation, you know, I said this last year, and I'm standing on it again this year. They're a big concern for me. But at the same time, medical reports are a big concern for me, too. There's something that's going on in that organization that's disconnecting injury-wise. I'm not sure if it was Wistrom was here when he left, you know, it was at the end of that, or if it's since he's been gone, because he's been gone for a few years now. But what I can say is that, for me, there's a lot of injuries that are piled up, and some of them are pretty permanent. And they continue to be in situations with guys that you would think, based on the way they've done it and protected them, shouldn't be hurt. But they're getting hurt, right? Javier shouldn't have got hurt, okay, in theory. Arrighetti definitely shouldn't have got hurt.
That injury, what the hell?
Okay, it's so, I mean, thumb. You look at Arrighetti.
Hit by a ball.
Why? Garcia, mm-hmm. I kind of get it. McCullers. Yeah, I get it, but that was going back to high school. You can see that. But of their six or seven major pitching injuries, five probably shouldn't happen. You know? Yeah. And if you look at that, that's a problem. That's a concern. And then the target data coming back is a concern. So they still have to figure that part of it out. Where they've been good is they've always got another guy. Blanco is another one, right? Probably shouldn't have been hurt. But, you know, six out of eight, that's a lot of why. It's a lot of why. Alvarez. We'll see, man. We'll see when he comes back, because you got really good chemistry right now. Not that Yordan's not part of that, but, you know, he's moving somebody.
They won without Kyle Tucker last year.
They did.
And Tucker came back, and it wasn't the same rate that they won at.
That's right. But that also had to do with Joe deciding to hit Pena, you know, eighth or whatever the hell he did. Yeah, I don't know.
What do you do in the short term? Last question. Just to keep this going, because it has been impressive, but it is seemingly strung together with, as I said earlier, duct tapes and rubber bands.
Well, they do need some help now, because they've got an opportunity to re-inject, unfortunately. I say unfortunately because I know Alvarez isn't ready yet. But with some of the other injuries that have gone away with the Pena and some, they have time to go get reinforcements now if they're close to ready and put them back in there.
Mm-hmm.
So because it's a clubhouse where everybody's going, we just did this. First half is over Sunday, right? Because I know I'm going to Atlanta on Thursday for the festivities. So, you know, it's first half is over Sunday. They got another week, and then they got 10 days. By the time the second half comes back, you want to see Alvarez back in the lineup. You want to see one of those arms show back up, if at all possible, right? Even if it's in Sugarland on its way in, you want to give these guys a little bit of hope, because what they just had just broke.
Yeah.
It broke because somebody's out. Somebody's out. So you can plug some of these other stars back in and then kind of keep the culture going with that. It's an opportune time for a window. I will go on the record now and saying I don't know what Dana trades for here? I don't know, because if they're getting this type of production, you probably ride the production. You know, I don't know if you trade them off, trade off the roster. What else do you go get if you're actually getting these guys back?
Right, exactly. Right?
And that's where you go sit the medical staff down in a corner and you say, give it to me right now because we have a chance to win this thing. That's
what
I'm at.
Be honest. Take your time. That's what I would tell
them. Think it through.
He is Jeremy Booth, FutureStarSeries.com. What's the latest?
We're here, man. We start tomorrow with our 28th
awesome.
and freshmen and eighth graders, and we're at San Jack Episcopal, University of Houston, and Houston Christian while we're here. 3.5 weeks of time. I'll tell you now, you remember Daniel Gotera?
Yeah.
Daniel Gotera is going to take over some of our media and our relations.
Very cool.
And, yeah, it's going to be good. He'll start in the next day or two. Mike Orta will do some stuff with us as well.
Awesome.
You know, kind of bringing the crew back together.
Nice, man.
But we're prepping, you know, doing some stuff with USA Baseball, getting some of those guys here when they're done because we sent some guys there, kind of a vice versa relationship. And it's going to be a loaded up summer. I don't know where I'll be in 28 days. I don't know if I'll be standing because this is always the stretch of July where
yeah.
I fall on my back when it's over. But, I know I'm tatted up and ready to go.
Get some aloe for those. Is that what you do? I don't even know what you do.
Yeah, you know what, man? Look, like I said, this has been a work in progress.
It looks so painful.
It was not good. It was
4 hours an arm?
It was
8 hours
it was
an arm?
16 hours total. But again, this is just, I've had the biceps for and shoulders for a while. This is about just finishing.
They look cool, but
they feel good.
Ow.
Yeah, they feel cool. I'm glad they,
you know. I doubt that, but you know what? You're a tougher man than me. He is Jeremy Booth, our Houston Astros front office insider. We always appreciate your time, Jeremy.
Absolutely.
Paul Galacho continues after this. Stick around.
ESPN 97.5.
$5,000. That's the average amount of money people in the U.S. are now spending on gas in a year. $5,000. That's crazy. If you drive, you have to download Upside, the free app that gives you cash back every time you get gas. That's right. You can earn real cash back with Upside just by buying the gas you're already buying. You can literally start earning cash back today.
I use Upside every time I fill up, and I've already made around $200, $300.
You're putting gas in your car.